I am Joni. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is May 8th of 1993, and Midtown's my home group. And I am very excited to be here. I came to this group before, so it's nice coming to a group again. And, you know, I said to someone before, you go into a meeting, and the first time you go, usually you're trying to figure out, okay, what doorway, what alleyway, and I've been to some meetings all over the world that you're like, okay, oh, there's a little AA symbol right there, go, there's the meeting, and it's always an accomplishment when you find the meeting and been there, and then what's even better is when you see the people, and even if you don't know the people in there, you start talking and start connecting and realize that they're just like you are, even if they don't speak the same language, even you know, if you, you know, or come from different backgrounds, have different stories, what I relate to is the language of the heart and realize that that I definitely fit here. I definitely belong here. And so I get to tell you in a general way about what happened to me, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And so I didn't drink for a long time, if you can kind of figure that out. And I only drank, you know, I started when I was 16, actually, because in the past I used to think, I was like, it was longer than that, you know, but it's, for some of my friends, that's late, you know, it's a late bloomer. So, you know, like I waited all the way till 16. And, but I basically grew up in a family, I'm the youngest of seven, and I have some of my brothers and sisters are much older, and so some of them had moved out of the house when I was growing up, and my parents would have alcohol around the house, especially if they would come visit. Oh, well, your brother or sister might be coming in, and they had a downstairs refrigerator and some alcohol, and so it seemed like a cool thing of, oh, you know, they're coming in town, and I even have one memory of one of my brothers turning 21, and you know, he's like, I'm a real man now, you know, I'm 21. And I just had these thoughts of drinking like that, like, oh, it's something, you know, when I'm older, I get to do. And but it just seemed very mysterious to me. I know a lot of people talk about that feeling of not feeling right or not getting the handbook to life when they were, you know, before they drank. And I didn't necessarily know that then. You know, life wasn't that bad. I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, a nice house, you know, parents that loved me, I, you know, got a lot of nice things. So in that sense, I wasn't, you know, oh, poor me, woe is me, my life is so terrible. It wasn't that I immediately think I need to drink. But if I look back at some things, sometimes I can think, oh, yeah, why would it that even in first grade, you get out of a game of duck, duck, goose, and you're crying in the corner. You know, why were you so affected sometimes? Or people would say you're very sensitive. You know, you'd get these little clues along the way that I just was affected so much more deeply sometimes by things, and I just didn't want. Sometimes I would just kind of run away and hide, and so it's not that I was searching and I need that alcohol, and I didn't realize that was, you know, what might make me feel better. But when I did have that first drink, I was one of those people that from the very first drink, I knew I want this. I want more of this. And same thing, like I said, I didn't know it was the solution. Like, oh, this is the answer to all my problems. It was more that, you know, I had one drink, and that phenomenon of craving for me started immediately. And I want more, and I'm going to get as much as I can, whenever I can. I don't care who or what stands in the way. This is kind of what my attitude was. And this, and so my first drink was I was going to an all-girls school, and we had, you know, these dances where we would invite guys from the guy's school, and so I was inviting this guy to a dance, and so at the school, we're saying, okay, we're going to get have an after party or have a pre-party of the dance, and we're going to get some alcohol there. And so people were talking about that, and we were taking orders. And so I took some. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll have some too. And then my date said he had just gotten a new car, and he was driving, and he wasn't going to, like, or he was able to use the car, and he said he wasn't going to drink that night. And so I really say my first drink you know, the way it happened was because I'm cheap, because I was like, well, I paid for this alcohol, so someone's going to drink this amount of alcohol, you know, kind of whatever I paid for. And so that's why I, you know, well, definitely, you know, someone's got to drink this. So my first drink was because of that, you know, because I paid for it in advance. And it was, you know, wine coolers, you know, people had gotten that. And so it was not, when I drank it, I thought, you know, I've heard some of the talks of just say no to drugs and watch out for alcohol. And when I had this wine cooler, of course, it tastes like fruit juice. And I thought, well, what's the big deal with this? This is fruit juice. You know, this doesn't even taste bad. You know, what's wrong with this? And I saw, you know, something, you know, alcoholism happening right away, where this girl was next to me and she was drinking a little bit and getting a little giddy. And I thought, well, look at her. She's already losing it. And I just started chugging what I was drinking. And I don't know what or how I had that. Is sometimes people are, you know, born to be, you know, Olympic athletes or have these amazing talents. Maybe I was born to be an alcoholic, because I just had this immediate, I innately knew what to do with alcohol. It's like, I just need more of it, and I can drink more than you can. You know, what's wrong with you? And, but that was my first drink. So I had this attitude already with alcohol in me. When I grew up, I was very, very shy. And I wouldn't, you know, I was afraid of, you know, talking to a lot of people or being in front of people. And, to the point where, you know, when, you know, I know I was in high school, I knew somebody, who knew me in AA later, and she said, yeah, you barely talked in high school. You know, you said, you know, a couple words, you know, because she didn't know me in the social situations, because if you saw me when I was drinking, I just felt very loosened up and very comfortable. And you know, I felt like I could show up, I could talk to people, I could look people in the eye, I could, you know, just be comfortable living, you know, just living life. And like I said, I didn't realize that other people didn't have this or didn't have the same reaction. But I started learning that people maybe didn't have the same reaction as I did, because I would talk to people at school, you know, and they would say, because I realized waiting from one weekend to the next was too long to wait, you know, for the weekend party. So I was finding the alcohol around my parents' house and going down, getting some alcohol, coming up, drinking on the weeknights, and sometimes going and throwing up and coming back into my room and drinking some more. And so sometimes I flip that out and tell a friend at school something like, oh, yeah, I was drinking something last night. They said, what? And on a Tuesday night, just by yourself in the bedroom? What were you doing? And so little by little, I started seeing that maybe what other people weren't as obsessed with alcohol as I was. They weren't, and I didn't understand why. You know, if you got what I got out of this, you want to keep having, you know, this. And so I didn't understand, but I quickly learned, okay, maybe just be a little bit quieter. Don't tell everybody everything that you're doing. But I still was obsessed with, like, where are we going to get it? How are we going to get alcohol? And make sure I, you know, had enough, you know, connections of, okay, we're going to go to this party or this place. And, you know, being underage, you have to really work that, you know. And so I remember one time, I know my senior year, a lot of times at the end of senior year, people go to beach week, you know, kind of senior week. They go to the beach and spend a whole week there. And I know I was really excited about that. Oh, yay, we're going to go off and spend a whole week without parents around. And I was always looking for that. Like, once I get to drink as much as I want, whenever I want, and all these people aren't on top of me, then it's going to be okay. And so that's what I thought of this, like, dream of, you know, beach week. And so I was talking to people, and my parents had a beach house, and they, so I kind of worked it, and, you know, and I had this innocent look down with teachers and parents, and sometimes that I wouldn't do anything wrong. And so my mom said, well, you can stay there as long as there's no alcohol and no boys in the house. Of course, Mom, you know, oh no, we wouldn't do anything like that, you know, and so as soon as I got the go ahead to go to that place, all right, everybody, what are you bringing? You know, make sure, because I was so worried that we wouldn't have enough to last that week, and who knew where we were going to go or how we were going to get it. So I had to make sure everyone packed enough. And I don't even remember packing a bathing suit. That just showed my mindset. We're going to the beach, but everyone's got to have their bags of alcohol. So we get there, and And I remember excited to go through everybody else's stash first. You know, like, yeah, okay, what'd you bring? What'd you bring? I'm keeping my secret stash here just in case I need it. And then little by little, people started just same thing. Like, people were saying, what is wrong with you? You know, kind of like, you're a little too crazy about this. You know yeah, we want to have fun. We want to hang out. But I was like, this is our mission, you know. Let's get the shot glasses out. Let's go now. And they're like, okay, I'm just waking up. It's breakfast, you know. Chill out a little bit. And so then even, and this is kind of a theme throughout my drinking, where my peers, you know, people my own age, started questioning what I was doing and saying, you know, you've got a problem or you need some help. And so they would say things like, well, at least can you have a drinking buddy? You know, you need to have someone you're drinking with. And so I was like, okay, will you be my drinking buddy? Okay, your dad, will you be my drinking buddy? I'm like, see, I've got a drinking buddy, haha, you know, but might just rotate drinking buddies. And then they would say, well, why don't you go one for one, you know, you each have the same amount, you know, like one drink to one drink. And I thought it was so cute and clever. I'm like, okay, your drink is a shot glass, and I'll take the big glass, you know, but we're each having one. So that's where, you know, I thought it was so cute and clever. And I'm like, yeah, I'm following your rules, so you get off my back, but I'm still trying to get what I want. And these friends quickly got very sick of me. They did one time, I just was doing nonstop shots before we go to a party, and they told me that I had to keep them stopping the car on the way to party, like, I feel sick, you know, and they'd have to keep stopping the car. And finally we get to the party and I said hi to the host and I'm like, oh, so good to see you. And I just fell at his feet. And then my friends just left me there and they're like, we're done with you. And they just went off somewhere. And I woke up, you know, after throwing up some, you know, after I woke up and getting sick and then, you know, kind of wiping myself clean and then saying to the host, hey, how are you? You know, trying to get him to pay attention to me, and he didn't really want to have anything to do with me. I don't know why. A little vomit here, you know. And then it was that kind of thing where people were getting really sick of me and not wanting to be around me. And another night that week, this week kind of shows a lot of my drinking, a lot of the themes of what happened. And another night this week, a bunch of us were drinking, and same thing. I was just drinking and drinking. And part of what happened, too, sometimes in my drinking is I would still be thinking, you know, and I was like, oh, I just want oblivion. I just want to be, you know, numb to the world and not think about anything. I just want to be free. And so I just would keep drinking to try and quiet the voices. I didn't really know that's what I was doing at the time, but I would drink and drink. And so I had this pair of rollerblades at the time that I thought I'll go out rollerblading. And it was 4 a.m. And, you know, I liked escaping places. You know, let me just go off. And nobody cares about me anyway. I'm very dramatic, you know, in the sense. But no one really cares. It's okay. No one's going to miss me. They don't really care. You know, just this way, you know, in my head. And so a couple of people saw, what are you doing? Where are you going? You know, and what are you doing at this time? I mean, some of them were up, but they said, well, if you're not back within, you know, 10 minutes or so, we're going to come looking for you. And I said, oh, yeah, whatever. So I just go off, and I think I'm still thinking clearly because I'm like, oh, I'm still, you know, I keep drinking, and I can't shut up my brain, and I keep going. And so I'm going off, and all of a sudden I see a cop car in the distance, and then this just shows how fuzzy I was, because all of a sudden the cop car's behind me, you know. So it just, things weren't, you know, clicking right in there. But I thought I was right on. And so all of a sudden the cop lights are going off behind me. So I just dive into a bush, you know, thinking he won't see me. Let's just go jump with my rollerblades into a bush. And then he sees me and gets me into the car, and he starts questioning me. And I'm digging in my pockets because I had heard that if you put a penny in your mouth, it'll take the taste of alcohol away and smell of it. So these little weird, funny, you know, things we hear from each other drinking, like, hey, try this next time. And so I'm digging in there, and he's like, what do you have in your pocket? What are you hiding? And I smartly go, money, you know, just, and I had this attitude, very smart attitude when I was drinking, and money, what's wrong with that? You know, just, you know, had my hands in my pocket, I was nervous, and we'd have these stories ready sometimes, like we were ready for anything, And then I told him, you know, my friends would be worried about me and they were going to come looking for me. And they drove around the corner right then. I was like, yes, you know. And I'm like, see, they're looking for me. I just, you know, I had a story about the rollerblading. You know, I couldn't sleep and my friends were up and I'm not very good. And I know there's no one on the road right now. I just, like, it's amazing how these things we have ready. And so I thought I completely got away that time. Like, haha, you didn't even know I was drinking. It wasn't until years later, one of my friends who was there with me that night told me, oh no, he followed us back to the house and he, you know, gave us a talking to and basically we were so scared that he was going to come in and, you know, raid the house and do everything. And he basically said he was going to come back and maybe check up on us. So, because all I remember right after that is they hid all the alcohol, and I was so upset. You know, they took my alcohol away. You know, because I've been drinking all theirs. But how could they take my alcohol away? And so that certain things like that happen. And so because of that, that same friend talked to her mom and was really concerned about me. And so she said to her mom, you know, Joni's just, you know, going crazy with drinking. I think she really has a problem. And her mom said, oh, not Joni. That's how everybody would think. You're like, oh, you know, not innocent little Joni, you know. And that's how I'd get away with things. But, and so she started saying some details of things I was doing. So her mom talked to my mom, and I had to go see a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist said, basically the first time that he talked to me about drinking, he said, well, are you, you know, worried about your, you know, your parents are concerned about your drinking. And he just talked to me for about 30 seconds. I'm like, no, I'm not that worried. We had a, you know, crazy week or party. I tried to belittle it. And so he just was like, okay. And he just started saying, you know, but I'm really fascinated with your low self-esteem. And so let's try some hypnotism and see what we can do. And I was like, oh, I'm not buying this. And I just tuned out then. So, and I, not saying anything for, you know, people in the field of psychiatry, because there are people, you know, who do an amazing job. But at the time, like, if the person isn't ready, someone's not ready to do anything, that nothing's going to happen. So I just tuned out, like, oh, this, I'm not going to listen to this person. But that, you know, then I went off to college. And once again, I think, yes, no one's around me. No one even knows me. I'm free to do whatever I want. Thank goodness. You know, college, everybody drinks. You know, what's the big deal? I'm not going to get in trouble. I'm not going to, you know, send off to my parents. And so I was really excited to go to college. And I went 3 hours away from where I lived. And so I was like, good, they won't come. My parents won't come checking on me all the time, you know. So I, this kind of also shows the level of my drinking. There's, you know, the week before school starts is kind of an orientation. People meet, you know, sometimes you have a little group of orientation, everyone, you know, doing little activities together. And someone in this group of this orientation in the week, this guy made an appointment for me at the Center for Alcohol and Drug Assistance on campus in that first week. So that just shows kind of the level of how I drank. And this is college and everybody drinks. And I'm like, oh, so the only reason that I followed through with that appointment was because I liked the guy and I wanted to, you know, do some further thing, you know, just get in a relationship. So I thought, okay, I'll go to this counselor. I'll go talk to her. But I mean, same thing, like I said, people, and another thing that happened during that week, some people like me to tell this part of my story, is I went to a concert during that week. And you know how concerts, or you go to events, and they, you know, charge so much money. So once again, I'm cheap, obviously, but they charge so much money. And if you want to drink like I drink, or like I'm sure people in here, it's not going to work to just keep drinking. So you have to pre-drink. You have to have as much as you can before you go. And I got to the point where I really loved grain alcohol. And because, you know, sometimes people put umbrellas or little fruit juice or something. And some people, you know, even use glasses. But I was like, grain alcohol straight out of the bottle. That's what I liked, you know, because I would, and I would chug it usually. But this time I was like, I can't really go in the concert like chugging a bottle of alcohol. So I'll use one of the cups, you know, get these one of the cups and put as much as I can in one of these cups and put the top on it. And they have those little straws, and so I get my little cup, and I'm drinking as much as I can, And I'm outside, and they have all the porta-johns out there. I go into the bathroom, and I drop my drink in the porta-john. So what do you do? Well, if you're like an alcoholic like me, you have to go get it out. So I got it out. And I always tell people, I'm like, I think that little top was on, that top was on there. I didn't get anything in there, you know, nothing got in. So that there wasn't anything mixed in. But I think maybe partly because I was young and so afraid of when and where I'm going to get the amount of alcohol that I want to get, and I don't know how I'm going to get it, and this, beer is so expensive, I might not have enough money to get enough that, I'm going to feel okay. And the guy that made this appointment didn't even know about that story. You know, I'm like, these people who are noticing things don't even know the half of the stories. So I go to this counselor that this guy suggested. One thing that was great about talking to this woman is she didn't, look at me the way most people were looking at me, of disgust and confusion and why would you do something like that? Just people were so boggled by, why could you do this? Or you had all this going for you. Why would you drink then? And people shaking the finger like, you shouldn't do that. So I was used to that. And this woman, luckily she didn't do any of that. She just started talking to me about, tell me about, how it's going at school and tell me about this. And so she started developing a relationship with me and connecting with me. And then she kind of slipped in some information about alcoholism. Like, we're here for this anyway, so I'm just going to kind of talk about this. And so she was very sneaky and just kind of slipped in some information. And what was happening was I was listening to it and realizing that that was me. And so then when I was drinking, and thinking about, am I an alcoholic? Am I not an alcoholic? Oh yeah, that was like me. And I'm not gonna think about that. Stop thinking about that. And she would try things like, why don't you just count your drinks? Maybe try this. And she would do things to try little tricks. And I'd come back to her and say, I lost count, or I forgot that I was supposed to be counting, or that coin thing again. She was like, maybe move like a penny from one pocket to the other. And I'm like, I needed the change for something. Sorry. It's just like, I'd always have a reason that it's not like I really couldn't stop. I just didn't want to, or it wasn't a good reason. So I always had these things, but she was just implanting these ideas in my head that slowly was kind of working on me. And it got to enough events happened during that freshman year of school where, I eventually, by the end of the year, she convinced me to go to rehab. Kind of one of those, you could check it out. And part of it was, remember last summer when you were home and, after the beach week, you were miserable because your parents sent you to the psychiatrist and everyone's watching you. So it basically was, I thought of rehab as a summer camp, is how I thought. It's like, good, I don't have to go home to my parents and have everyone looking on top of me. So, sure, I'll go away to this rehab. And I even said to her, I said, I don't have to stop drinking, do I? She's like, honey, just go. She didn't want to really talk too much about it. Just go. And there was a little back and forth about when I was going to go, but I made it to my last exam. That's why my sobriety date's May 8th. I went to my last exam and went straight to rehab. And I even had to tell my parents because my parents didn't know all the details, and they said, when you get out of school, maybe we'll go visit your sister or do this. And I was like, no, actually, I'm going to go to an alcohol drug rehab. And I had to tell them, and they're like, what? What do you mean? And they, like I said, they didn't know all the details, but they knew some, from the year before. And so I went, and I get to this rehab. And the good thing I'd say about the rehab that I went to is they gave us all a big book. So we got a big book, and then we had meetings every single day, either going somewhere or people were coming in. So it was definitely based on AA. It was not some place where, they were trying to say, we have all the answers. And, sure, there's some rehab language, but it just said, you need AA. When you're here, you're just kind of clearing yourself out, but you need to go to AA. from here, and they even had, because the rehab that I went to was in Pennsylvania, and my school that I went to was in Pennsylvania, and so they, I was going to come back to Maryland where I was living, and they made sure I had a sponsor when I left the rehab. And a couple things happened in the rehab where, you know, at first I get there, like I said, I treated it like a summer camp, and I just thought, you know, it was May, this rehab was, you know, had rolling hills. It was beautiful, you know, kind of this place that it was not the Karen Foundation, if people know. But it's so it was just like it was beautiful spring, you know, springtime, and you know, so I would just hang out with the boys and play sports is what I thought. I'm like, oh, this is fun. Yeah, it was like a summer camp, and then they start giving you a treatment plan. It's not just summer camp. So then they say, you know, you have to maybe stay here a little bit longer because you're not following these things. You have to do these treatment, you know, plan op, you know, things that we're telling you to do. So I started doing that, and then when they and the things that happened was, one, I saw people that were younger than me because I was 18, and there were people that were younger than me that that actually were okay with being sober, because that was an excuse that I was trying to use, like, oh, I'm too young. And but so I couldn't, even though because I was 18, I went to the adult side, and they even gave me a choice. And I think I was so afraid of being with people my own age, because I didn't know how to interact with them without alcohol. So I chose to go with the older group. But then sometimes we would meet together. And so I saw these people that were younger than me that seemed excited about being sober, had that hope about being sober. And so that kind of hooked me a little bit. Like, oh, well, how can you be happy and sober? How do they go together? Because I didn't think that the two could mix. And then, you know, to kind of see people who, you know, who wanted, like I said, wanted sobriety. So I just, that hooked me a little bit. But then, and then they would talk about this higher power. And I heard this, and there was, you know, a pastor there that was pretty amazing, you know, that, so I was like, okay, maybe, you know, kind of that, oh, maybe possibility, you know, this might work, but I'm not sure. Still a little hesitant. So I came home, and they had me in the aftercare, and they also had, they assigned me a sponsor in my area. So they said, we're going to make sure you have a sponsor. So it was good that they did all that. But then I get home, and I'm thinking, great, now it's like a prison sentence. That's how I felt. I have to go to these meetings. And poor me, you know, I'm young, want to go have fun, and people just want me to go to these meetings and churches and sit there and talk about alcoholism, and my life is over. You know, I just kind of had this feeling of, oh, poor me. And but then, you know, I started going to these meetings, and even the sponsor that they had assigned me said, you know, why don't you meet some other young people and do some activities so you don't, you know, feel so bad. And she was like, do something, have, you know, kind of enjoy yourself. And so I would, but I, like I said, I was afraid of being around people my own age, because how do I talk to you? How do I interact with you? So I went to this one meeting. It was, you know, right by where I lived. And there was some young people that were there, and they said, oh, come to this meeting with us. And I said, oh, no, I'm not going to that meeting. I'm going to this meeting tomorrow, because that was my plan. It was right by my parents' house. And also, little side note, I couldn't drive at the time because I'd been kicked off my insurance. That was even not a total drinking problem. That was just me. And if you took the alcohol away, every time I drove, it was like I was, you know, in the Indy 500. I mean, I really thought, you know, like I'm just going to, I got this adrenaline rush from driving fast, you know, and I, you know, well into sobriety, I would do that where, you know, my car at the time would go 85 and I would pin it and count how many seconds it took to get back to 85 or something, you know, like, ah, it's about how fast I'm going. Let's see. So that's, I just had this, as people said, a suicide wish. But anyway, so I got kicked off insurance for some problems I'd had. And so I had to get rides for my whole first year of sobriety. And so because of that, my parents started driving me to meetings. And then they started getting smart. They said, you need to find a ride home. So that was good. You know, I had to talk to people. Great, to get rides. And then started having to get rides to meetings. And so these young people that I met at the meeting, I said, no, I'm going to this other meeting tomorrow. They said, well, you'll see our friend Rachel there. She makes coffee. And I said, okay, you know, just just filed it kind of in the back of my head. Well, I get to that meeting, and Rachel makes an announcement at the halftime, and she said, "We just went to this Young People's Conference, International Conference of Young People in AA, and we had so much fun, and we're doing this again." She just seemed very enthusiastic and about this, and she said, "It's called Icky Paw, and we're doing this." And so I remembered in my head, okay, this girl Rachel, they said, you know, they know this person. I need a ride home. I don't know anyone else here. I'll go ask Rachel for a ride home. And so I tried to act like I'm asking about this announcement that she had. You know, what is this Icky Paw thing? Can I get a ride home? You know? So I try and sweeten the deal. Like, I'm interested in whatever you're selling there, you know, as if that's what I was thinking. And so she talks to me about Icky Paw and doing service and having fun. And then she gives me a ride home, and she at the time was a chain smoker. She's sitting there smoking and talking to me and really excited about doing things. And she just started scooping me up like, "Oh, I'll just come pick you up for the meeting, and I'll take you here, and we'll go here." And so I started just saying, okay. So I didn't think about it. Luckily, I didn't have a bunch of people who were trying to make plans with me. That a lot of friends did not have any interest in making plans with me. So I didn't have many other things going on. And I just said, okay. So that was the surrender of sure, I'll go. But I didn't think about it too hard. That's good, so I just said, sure. Because, first of all, this is someone who's excited to be around me. I didn't have a lot of those people. Someone who's not disappointed and frustrated with me and, why are you doing this? Or my friends who were kind of afraid about being around me because they knew that they were drinking and I'm going to ruin their good time and, you know, what can we do around you? So no one was really wanting to be around me. So this girl is just saying, come with us, and we're going to go here, and we're going to do this. And sure, okay. And so I started going along with her, and then all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, I'm not thinking about drinking every day. Like, it just kind of happened because I just started following her around and going these places. And so without my knowing, AA was working on me without, you know, me really having to do too much. I just was showing up, and I was getting in the car, and I was going these places. And she immediately was showing me, you know, let's do service. Let's be, you know, get to the meeting early and talk to people before the meeting and after the meeting. Go hang out. And we go to, you know, diners and places where I remember this one place we went in Bethesda was called Hot Shops. And for the longest time, I thought these rolls were free. Like, they were put on the table. Much later, I was, oh, we were supposed to pay for them. You know, luckily, I think other people were picking up the tab or something. He's like, oh, newcomers walking away with those extra rolls again. So I started seeing people having fun and doing things, and they were doing activities. And for me, it was some of these conferences. People were going, traveling around, and let's go get in the car together, and we're going to drive over here and hear these speakers. And they were excited about, you know, hearing good speakers, and let's just go together and do this. And I just kind of, like I said, just jumped on, and I didn't even realize what I was doing and just kind of got swept up in it. But at 3 months sober, I thought, well, you know, I got sober in May, and, you know, I just finished my freshman year at this school, and of course I'm going back to that same school. That's what people do. They go to the same school for 4 years, right? Just in my head, I was thinking that's what you have to do. So I said, well, I'm going back to school, and, you know, it's August, I'm going back to school. And people said, you know, people can do it. You know, a lot of people have gone back to school sober. It's not like you can't, but you want to have a lot of tools in place, or, you know, maybe, you know, could go locally. People gave me lots of ideas, and, you know, this is my experience, and people talk to me. Basically, I was just, I'm not listening to any of you, I'm going to school. And so, I did try some of these things that they said, where I did get a sponsor. I went back to that school, got a sponsor, I went to meetings every day, and I even got moved out of the dorm that was, you know, the party dorm that I had originally, you know, been part of. And so I was in a single room way off, kind of off campus, and I just was miserable. You know, I was not there very long because I was there, I'd say, about a week. And then this, my sponsor, who was Rachel, was my sponsor at the time, so I got her. She was out of town, and she wasn't going to be reachable that whole time. And so she said, well, you know, why don't you talk to this woman, Karen, you know, while I'm gone, you know, make sure you're calling. And she was someone I was kind of connecting with anyway. So I talked to Karen on the phone, and I would be really upset about something going on. She's like, well, have you eaten? No, I haven't eaten anything. Well, sit and talk to me on the phone and eat something. And then I don't know if it was the food or what she was saying, but all of a sudden I started, you know, calming down. And she's like, have you, you know, get to the meeting, you know, do this, try this. And someone else that Karen sponsored was good friends with me. And she said, I want to go, you know, see Joni and we're going to go do this. And luckily, maybe, you know, somehow my, you know, Karen was saying that was okay. That this other girl got there and kind of saw how miserable I was. And luckily people were still, we had these beach houses. Our home group at the time had, you know, what everyone would go do, you know, go rent beach houses for the summer, go on ski trips, do all these fun activities. Like I said, which made me see that people could have fun and be sober at the same time, which I didn't think was possible. And so luckily some people were still at the beach that weekend. It was Labor Day weekend or something, you know, or maybe even the weekend after, which was always sessions weekend, you know. So we went and I was outside of Philadelphia at school, and this girl got there and she said, you're just miserable. Maybe we could go drive to the beach from here. It was only 3 hours. And I was like, yeah, let's go to the beach. So we went to the beach and met everybody from our home group here, like Ocean City, Maryland. And I basically said, I'm not going back to school. You know, I'm not. And my sponsor was there. My sponsor's husband is this guy named Frank that passed away who said to me, well, either you're going to go back there and you're going to try these things, you know, really, you know, work this, you know, work with a sponsor and really do this, or you're going to come back here. Kind of like he just laid it out to me, like this one, this path or this path. And I said, I'm coming home. I'm not doing it. I can't do it. And I said, I did feel like I couldn't start over because I'd had so much fun all summer and I didn't feel like I had it in me to start from scratch and start with the new group and do everything. And he's like, okay, I can see that, but now you have to call your parents and talk to them. And so I talked to them, and luckily they were understanding. My mom actually has been in Al-Anon since before I was born. So she, I think, was a little bit like, we're not rocking the boat. We're not going to, don't want to, you know, make you drink here. But let's go ahead, come home. She knew something was working over the summer. So I came home and I got a job, and I didn't have much living experience. So I got a job. All my work experience at the time was babysitting and working at my dad's law office. So I was, you know, go to this interview, and I remember Rachel, my sponsor at the time, was saying, this is what you say, here's, you know, we were in open and classified together, let's look at these things, here's how you write a check. I mean, all these things, I just didn't have living skills. And so I get this job, and I work at a daycare downtown D.C., and then a year later, I end up going back to school into, you know, University of Maryland. So I just went in state, and I think my parents were happy about that because the cost difference of going to the school where I went versus, oh, now we have in-state tuition and woohoo, you know. So they didn't mind, and then I, you know, I tell people kind of not in the program, like, oh, I purposely took a year off because I wasn't sure where I was going. And then I've gotten a college of education because I'm a teacher today, so kind of as if this was the plan, when really I can tell you the drunk side of the story. You know, I tried to go and it didn't fully work. So I did. I worked for a year, and it just, and I was working with two-year-olds, and I loved being with the two-year-olds because they understood me, and I understood them. I was brand new sober with a bunch of two-year-olds, and we were having our temper tantrums together, and it was perfect. Just dealing with their parents and adults, that was the hard part. But I could, you know, play with the Play-Doh, and I can be right there with you. Then I, like I said, I went back to school, and when I was about 3 years sober, my sponsor Rachel said she couldn't sponsor me anymore. She had had some resentments, she said. She had resentments against my home group, and she said even when she was going to other meetings, just talking to me, she just felt uncomfortable, and she said, I really can't help you. You know, why don't you call, because she knew this woman, Karen, I would talk to sometimes. She said, why don't you call Karen from my house right now? And it wasn't until later I saw, you know, wow, she really cared about my well-being. She had her stuff that she was going through, but she didn't say, you've got to take on my resentments too and come with me, you know. She basically said, you know, if it's working for you, stay there and, you know, call Karen, get a spot, you know, get connected. And so I did. I called Karen right then, And that was a shift for me because Rachel was someone I would hang out with more and see all the time and go places with and do things with. And Karen was someone who I had to be ready with an inventory on the phone. And I was a little bit more uncomfortable. Okay, I've got to kind of make sure I've done 10 step and written some things down. And okay, I'm ready to talk to you about some things that have happened. And so it was definitely a transition for, you know, how can I be with a different sponsor? How is this going to work? But luckily, like I said, she knew me and I knew her. And so it was a little bit easier. But then about 4 years sober, I went to Europe for the summer, and that was just like a study abroad program. And that I'd say was the first time that even though, you know, some people might say their sponsor was kind of like a higher power, and that was one thing that was kind of hard for me. I put so much in Rachel, but I'd say going away from my home group and going into Europe, and I was with this group of Americans who were so excited that McDonald's sells sangria, or, you know, they get so excited about things, you know, and they weren't alcoholic like me. They're just having fun, but I had to mentally put poison stickers on the sangria or the alcohol. I am bodily and mentally different than my fellows. I cannot drink that. Even the flight over there was a girl who was chatting with me, and she got up to go to the bathroom, and because we were getting along so well and chatting, she put her drink down on my tray table and went to the bathroom, and I'm sitting there. I even got out, because at the time I had 4 years sober, and I got out my four-year chip in one hand, and I think I got a journal out in the other hand. God, please keep me sober. God, please keep me sober. The drink's like sliding towards me. So I really had to have, AA and God be bigger than just my home group. I had to, you know, there were times I was in Europe and I would go to meetings, go to these amazing meetings and, you know, meet people, even get the back tour of the best restaurants, or this is the good, you know, tour of the city and this is what you should do. And I love that because you'd kind of have instant connections with people. But then sometimes I'd be alone, and I was like, nobody knows me, and, you know, God, it's you and me, and how am I going to stay sober? How can I stay sober without, you know, people all around me and activities all the time and busyness and things to do? And so I realized, you know, it had to get bigger for me. My program had to get bigger. My higher power had to get bigger. And so I felt like I grew a lot because that was the time. And there's times in sobriety where it's been that grow or go. You know, it's here I'm at a turning point where either I'm going to be here and do the work that's here for me and, you know, step up, or I'm, you know, running out the door. And so I just, luckily, I think I was, you know, I felt like my program was in overdrive there because I saw this is life and death. This is not just a fun party that we're just going to go around and do activities. This is, you know, I mean, because it's not like I didn't do recovery before then. I definitely was taught recovery, but I felt like I was doing a lot of unity and service. A lot of the, you know, and my sponsor now says there's three parts of the triangle: recovery, unity, and service. If you're only doing a little bit of recovery, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't fit as well, and it's, you know, kind of the stool topples over. And so I definitely had to kind of step it up with a recovery and was, you know, make sure I was, you know, working through the steps with my sponsor. And then I, you know, came home, and that was actually soon after that I, my husband and I started dating, and I got married in sobriety. And that was one of those things where, you know, I was having to live with someone else and be in a relationship. People joke, you know, if you think you see your defects, get in a relationship, and then you really see them. And so having to live with someone else and be with someone else and see how my defects come out, or, you know, if I had jealousy or insecurity, and I did have a lot of things going on at different times, you know, and we went through a lot of the ups and downs of how can we get along and, you know, both go to meetings and do things. And the part of both going to meetings, that wasn't as hard until we had kids, because when I, it was, and also in between that, my brother also got in a car accident, that he had a, it was a really bad car accident. He survived, but he has a brain injury, and that was in 2000, and my brother is 2 years older than me, and to this day, he doesn't always act older than me. You know, he's kind of, you know, mentally, you know, sometimes he seems okay, but then other times, you know, I'm just like, he's not fully there. So it's just, we've gone through, you know, I went through a lot of challenges with that, and then and having to, you know, learn how to live life on life's terms. You know, just how do I show up? How do I deal with these emotions and feelings and not run to the bottle? Because before anything, I need that bottle to solve it. I'm just trying to chug away, you know, the worries and the fear. And if I just keep drinking enough of this liquid, maybe it'll wash away anything that I'm worried about. And then here, you realize, okay, how do I deal with this? It's not like my problems go away, because it's the opposite for me. When I put the drink down, I still have everything else to deal with. Things do not go away, because that's what people used to say. Oh, well, just stop drinking. Just put that down. And I'm like, you don't get it. If I put the alcohol down, then I can't deal with life. I don't know how to deal with life. And so that's where you taught me that you need the higher power. You know, how each person is telling their story about how they connected to some kind of higher power. And for me, that's evolved a lot over time, where, you know, I did grow up in a religion that I do send my kids to, you know, to that, because for me personally, I'm so comfortable with, you know, the God, like a higher power, God of my understanding that I've learned through AA. But I know that my kids don't have that. So I was like, okay, they can be introduced to the religion I grew up with. But I love how, you know, anything, sometimes if you look through the big book and you, anytime it talks about a higher power, you look at the different terms that they mention for it, you know, creative intelligence, you know, and then kind of the love, you know, when I think of peace and calm and ease and things that, something that's so much bigger than me, you know, just if my higher power can see, you know, the big picture and can see everything so much clearer. When I'm sitting there, you know, working my, you know, little problems and worried about everything, I'm so small, and then all of a sudden, you know, God's just out there, you know, it's going to be all right in the long run. You know, it might not go the path that you want it to go, but it really is going to work out. And that's happened with huge things, huge life events, and that's happened with little things. Because sometimes for me, it's the day-to-day little things that are harder. Because the big events sometimes happen, and people gather around, and they know how to support you and help you. But for me, sometimes it's those little things that eat away, and then, you know, little by little, I'm feeling uncomfortable, and I don't know if I can call you, and I don't know if I can talk to you. You won't fully understand, or you don't have time. I don't want to burden you. You know, maybe I've been sober a while, so I shouldn't be feeling that way. You know, just whatever it is starts going in and thinking certain things. And for me, what happened is I had my daughter. I was about 11 years sober, so that was 2004, and I had my daughter, and that for me was a huge turning point, because I was used to going to meetings every single day, used to doing tons of activities, tons of service, tons of activities. Boom, I have my daughter, and all of a sudden this little life needs me all the time. And my husband travels for a living, so I know he can't help all the time. And I just had this, you know, what do I do? Because I grew up in AA, you have to do all the, you know, do all these things and try and show up. And so I tried to do both as best as I could. I'm like, I'm going to show up and do everything I can in AA, and I'm going to be the best mom. And I was carting around the baby carrier. Okay, can people help? Can I put the baby monitor in the meeting and go stand out there? So I'm kind of in the meeting, but I'm not. You know, I was trying anything, and realized that, you know, sometimes that works, you know, to do as much as you can. But sometimes it's that's where, like I said, the personal recovery, my self-sufficiency and my thinking I knew how I could do it was actually killing me, you know, and little by little, like, no one understands really what it's like in my situation, kind of that poor me. It's so hard, and my kid isn't sleeping or has reflux, has these, you know, like, whatever problems, people come in, and my husband can't help because he's gone, and so then I just, I didn't stop going to meetings, and that's something that I actually haven't stopped going to meetings in sobriety, but it doesn't mean that I have always been great with my higher power or with my personal recovery. And that's what I feel like sometimes. That's where, you know, it's easy to show up places sometimes, but what's really going on inside? And that's where, you know, I can look the part and I can show up and do certain things, but am I really there? Am I really present? And that's where I think of the honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, you know, how this program works. Because if I'm not being honest with you, if I'm not telling you the truth, not talking to my sponsor, not talking to other alcoholics, I had this not that long ago, a year ago on Thanksgiving, I was in a place that day, and it was kind of, you know, sometimes it can be a perfect storm of events, you know, some different things happen to lead up to this. But I purposely was talking to people that I could say, oh, how are you doing? And just kind of keeping the conversation very light. And then, you know, little by little, I was imploding inside. And then I had to have a Thanksgiving dinner with all my family and, like, host all these people when I just was just collapsing inside. And so, oh, just got to hold it together. And then just all of a sudden, you're like, wouldn't it be nice if I just was gone? What if I drove off the side of the road? And these little thoughts come here, you know, like, wait a minute, where'd that come from? So where, you know, like I said, is how is my personal recovery on a day-to-day basis? I had another daughter, and it was amazing what could happen with my second child, where I learned a lot of different things. Some of it was me, some of it was my child, you know, but I definitely learned, wow, I can, you know, there are a lot of moms in recovery, and I can do this, and I can talk to people, and I can learn, how do I do this? How do I stay sober? You know, I can learn how to work and show up for work. I can talk to people about that. I can be open-minded to someone else's view, willing to do all this, you know, try the steps. And that's where, for someone like me, I can't be stuck in my way is the only way. I have to open up and think, maybe. You know, just maybe. Usually it's not like, yes, I'll do your way. Usually it's maybe I'll try your way. Maybe it'll work. And then what's amazing is what happens is when I do try that and then it works. And then I feel bad. I'm like, oh, my way didn't work as well. But it's amazing to be here. And like I said, I have amazing, you know, gifts, but outside and internally. And I need... And I, it's not that I've achieved them, but it's one of those things where I need you all. I need a daily reprieve. I need to make sure I'm showing up and connecting with, you know, my program, my higher power on a daily basis. And thank you guys so much for being here. Thanks for letting me share.